Second Kings, chapter 5. Now Naaman. I don't know if you remember the story of Naaman. We'll visit again. If it's new or if it's old, it doesn't matter. The Bible's like, I've read that. So it's like, you know, if you try to give me a book that I've already read, I'll say, oh, I read that. And that's a reasonable answer. You know, oh, Adam, you should read this. This is a great book. Ah, I read that. And then you go on with our lives. Nobody's upset. But you say, oh, the Bible, I read that. That's not how it works, is it? Right? We study to show ourselves approved. And I'm just amazed every time. I know this inside out, backwards and forward. I can recite this. So I got this. No. Never works that way. There's always something new. There's always a deeper meaning. There's always a deeper level. I've heard people like expound a passage, and I'm thinking, I taught that 3 weeks ago. What are you talking about? You're way. I didn't get any of this stuff. That's good, though. I'm going to write this down. I'll pirate it later. You know what I mean? There's just a depth to it. It's amazing. So even if there's a story, and even if we know it very well, doesn't mean we shouldn't go over it. Now, Naaman. Now, question one. What does Naaman mean?
Pleasant? Pleasant?
Yes, it means pleasant. How'd you know that?
Because I looked it up.
Because you looked it up, which is, by the way, that's good. You know what I was going to ask.
Well, I try to come prepared.
That's right. You try to come prepared. Good answer. Good. You've got to move to the head of the class today. It's Naomi. It's the male version of Naomi. From the book of Ruth, remember Naomi, Ruth's mother-in-law. Her name is Pleasant. She says, don't call me Pleasant. The Lord has dealt bitterly with me. Call me
bitter.
Yeah, call me bitter old hag. What's the word? What's the name?
Mara.
Mara. Mara, bitter. Remember? Okay. This is Naaman. Pleasant. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria. Okay, so he's the general of the Syrian army. Why are we dealing with him? He's nobody to us, right? You remember in the New Testament, Jesus pointed to him. Hey, there were plenty of widows in the time of Elijah, but to none of them was the prophet sent except the widow of Zarephath. There were beaucoup lepers in the day of Elisha. But who got healed? Naaman. And they wanted to throw him off a cliff. Why? If I said that to you, hey, you know, in the days of Elijah, there was all kinds of widows, and God sent Elijah to the widow of Zarephath, and there was beaucoup lepers in the days of Elisha, and the only one that got healed was Naaman. You don't want to throw me off a cliff, do you? Why not? Why did they want to throw Jesus off a cliff? No. The answer's really because they were Gentiles. And God, in the flesh, was saying, hey, God could have dealt with anybody. Who got the blessing? Gentile lady. And nobody in Scripture, this is the amazing thing. In two or three chapters, I can't remember, in the book of Leviticus, this is how you cleanse. When a leper is cleansed, this is the ritual. This is the sacrifice you give. You remember there's the blood on the tip of the right ear, on the right thumb, on the right toe, big toe of your right foot, and then the oil, same. You remember that? Big cleansing ritual. You got to give this animal, you got to do this, you got to. But it was never done. Miriam was cured of leprosy, but that was before that was given. And then Naaman the Syrian. Did he go to show himself to a priest off of that sacrifice? I don't think so. That sacrifice that is outlined in the book was never done until Jesus showed up and started cleansing lepers. And then there's probably a steady stream going to the high priest. Yeah, I had leprosy. Yeah, you didn't have leprosy. Get out of here. I get time for you and your foolishness. Hey, no. I recognize him. That guy's name is Eliyahu or something. He's, I'm the one who said he was unclean. No, I remember him. So what happened anyway? And they would hear, well, Jesus of Nazareth. And they would, at first it was like, hey, this is great. How do we do this? I've never done one. Well, let's look in the book. And they'd be flipping through. It says here that we're supposed to. They never did it. Why? No lepers were ever cleansed. And here is what the only time in the Old Testament, besides Mary, we have the cleansing of the leper. So I think it's kind of interesting on just that alone, right? And he's not Jewish. Now, Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, he's on the bad guy's team, right? He's a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord, that's all caps, Lord, had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. So he's got an A-plus rating. He's this, he's doing great, he's wonderful, he's honorable, he's valiant, he's leprous. That just wipes out all the good stuff. If you had his resume, would you accept it all or none? I don't want any of it if I have to have leprosy on the end of it. Right? So he's leprous. Now, I believe it's Josephus. You can check me on this. I do a lot of reading. I listen to messages. I've studied over the years. I don't always remember where I got something. Naaman is allegedly, it's extra biblically, but I think it's from a good source. I think it's Josephus, who usually gets his facts straight. Naaman's the unnamed warrior who peradventure shot an arrow, and it just so happened to hit Ahab between the joints of his armor. And Ahab says, take me from the battle, I'm wounded. That was Naaman. Okay? And so he gets this promotion, and apparently he's valiant, he's a good soldier and stuff, and he's all the things that are said about him. But he's on the wrong team. Except when God is blessing the opposition, because, listen, you know what scares me to death? And it really does. I'm teaching through like Jeremiah, or right now through Ezekiel. God's going to use the most ungodly, wicked nation to smarten up Israel and get them in 70 years of captivity. They fall by the hands of their enemies. Oh, that's nightmarish. Imagine if, Communist China attacked America, and here we are all speaking Chinese and swearing allegiance to Mao and the Chinese Communist Party under pains of death, and they're going to throw us in some unspeakable prison and harvest our organs while we're still alive. And just think about how awful that is. Can God do that? Some would argue he should. People attribute this to Billy Graham, but I think it was his wife who said, either God's going to judge America for her sins or apologize to Sodom and Gomorrah. I don't know if it's that bad. It's way worse in some circles, but there's a lot of righteous people here. And God knows how to... Was there righteous people in the day of Jeremiah? So anyway, here's God blessing the opposition and using them to put down Ahab, who was a rabid dog, as far as I'm concerned. His comeuppance was a long time coming. God's wheels of justice turn really slowly, but they grind to powder when he's not willing that any should perish. We know that. We've read that. He was a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies that had brought away captive out of the land of Israel, a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. So here's a little Jewish girl, stolen from her parents. Were her parents killed? Was her brothers killed? Did she have a sister? Was the sister taken? We know so many things we don't know yet. But here she's not in Israel anymore. There is an Israel. She's not there. And she's, when she says she waited on Naaman's wife, she's her maid, her personal. It would be a valet if it was a male, but I don't know what the. I'm not up on my Downton Abbey. I don't know who, what the. Is it just maid? I don't know. Personal maid, attendant, whatever. That's what she is. And this isn't even an Edwardian society. Okay. And she said, that's the same, this little maid. What's her name? We don't even know. Hey, God does. She said to her mistress, Would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that where it was in Samaria, he would recover him of his leprosy. Now, verse 3 is kind of a mystery to me. Oh, Naaman's got leprosy? Well, I hope his nose falls off. Hope it falls off on his coffee while he's drinking it. Jerk. Taking me out of my homeland. She's concerned about his welfare, and that is astonishing to me. That's very gracious of her. Is this Stockholm Syndrome? You know, when you're caught up with your captors and you start to buy into their plight? Is she too young to know better? She's old enough to be a maid, so she's probably figured some things out. Has she found a home there? They treat her really good. I don't know. But she's incredibly to me. I think God's touched her heart in such a way. She's not. Look, I talk about forgiveness because if you don't, you'll be bitter. But I've never been kidnapped and taken into a wicked land away from my home, away from my God, away from my family, away from my friends. That's never happened to me. So I can be kind of glib a little bit. I mean, listen, we've all been betrayed. We've all been hurt. We've all been, wrongs have been done to us. We don't have to visit there. We know. I can say, okay, what's your story? And we all have stories. But this isn't one of them, by and large. I'm not trying to minimize anyone's pain or anything like that. When I say forgive, we have to forgive. It's incumbent upon us, and we get to. But this forgiveness and this forgiveness. Somebody hurts my little feelings. It's probably I was being too sensitive, right? It's no big deal. I can shrug it off. But kidnapping is a hard one to. But here she is. Oh, you know what? If he was in, there's a prophet in Samaria. If he were there, he would recover him from his leprosy. How does she know that? Nobody's ever been recovered from their leprosy. She's hearing what's going on, perhaps. She's aware somehow of the ministry of Elijah and now the ministry of Elisha. I don't know, right? He would recover him of his leprosy. And one went in and told his Lord, saying, thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel. And the king of Syria said, so we skip a few steps here. He buys in. He goes to see the king. Yeah, there's a prophet down in Samaria. My wife's maid says that he can cure my leprosy or heal my leprosy. So the king says, go. King of Syria said, go and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. And he departed, took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of raiment. My note here has 10 talents of silver is 52,800. Because this is when the Bible was written, and now gold is going crazy. 6,000 pieces of gold is 384,000. So we're looking at over $400,000 and probably over $500,000 now. Who knows, right? It's a big chunk of change. Why is he going to the king? Because this is how it's done. You remember Ahab had his prophets. Most Jezebel had her prophets. And they prophesied, you better tell the king what he wants to hear. That was done everywhere, except by prophets of God in Israel. And, you know, and sometimes they pay for Micaiah. Says, hey, yeah, you come back from battle. God hadn't been talking to me, I'll tell you that right now. And they were serving bread and water, like, come back in peace. What happened to Micaiah after that? We don't know. But if you're the real deal in a godless, wicked time, think it all the way through. That would be a hard... That'd be hard to be, hard to do, hard to maintain that. So go to the king, because the king's going to tell one of his prophets, you know, because the king owns all the prophets. He does, too, not this one. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, now when this letter has come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy. King to king, this is the way it was done. The king's not doing anything. The Syrian king, who likes Naaman, obviously, he's not doing anything untoward. He just thinks this is the way it is. But the king freaks. And it came to pass when the king of Israel had read the letter that he rent his clothes and said, am I God to kill him, to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore, consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me. None of that stuff. He's not that. But you know, I think... it's called projection. You know, I don't believe anything you say. Why? Because I lie all the time. And I think people are liars. And so you tell me something, I think, they're lying. Why? Because I'm not a liar, and I'm always lying. So when I hear something, I project my personality onto you. There's people in America right now who are... anti-Israel, right? And they call Israel and people who support Israel fascists. How confused are you? Wait a second. Adolf would salute you. He's thinking you're doing great. And I'm the fascist. I'm not anti-Semite like you, so I'm the fascist. That's projection. That's all that is. Okay, it's funny to me to watch people. The governor talked about stop bloviating, he said, and just come and arrest me. I thought, wait a second, the governor of California accused somebody of bloviating. Oh my goodness, it's funny. If you gotta laugh, you gotta laugh. It's projection. That's all it is. He thinks that's how it's done. So he's all upset. He's just, he's seeking a quarrel against me. He's, chillax. And it was so when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes. Rending your clothes is a big deal. And that's a sign, not so much for a king. King's got plenty of clothes. When you rend your clothes, because you can't rip your heart. This is as close as you can come. But clothes are important in a society. You got one tunic. You got one, you know, two robes. You got your Sunday going to church robe. No, not that you go to church, but you know what I mean. You get your finery for the weddings and stuff like this. You get your everyday stuff. It's a big deal. You don't just tear them lightly. So Elisha, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, and he sent to the king saying, wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Like, what's your problem, dude? That's how we'd say. Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. Hey, I'm not your prophet for profit. You didn't hire me, but send him now. Just because your God is flaccid, impotent, and can't do anything, doesn't mean my God can't. This Elisha has faith. This king doesn't. This king is Ahaziah. He's the one who said, okay, no more Baal worship. I learned my lesson. So we're going back to the old style. Remember, Jeroboam made Israel sin. He put the golden calves in Dan and Bethel. You remember that? And, okay, everyone's worshiping Jehovah now, and this is the way we're going to do it. So he's got the right God worshiping him wrong. Is Ahaziah a believer? No. No. Not in your life. No. He's freaked out when somebody comes up and he's now, oh, we got to go to war now. Oh, look what's happening. And Elisha was just like, hey, Ahaziah, God. You remember the one who pulled your fat out of the fire over in Edom? God. It's instructive how God shows up and works with pagan kings. And when I say pagan, I mean Israel, northern kingdom, Ahab, pagan, Ahaziah, pagan, Omri, I mean the whole cast of characters. I wouldn't give you a dime for the whole shooting match. None of them are godly and good, and God keeps on showing them. Listen, does anyone, did God demonstrate to Ahab who he was? The fire on Mount Carmel, and several times since? Yeah, send them to me. You just got to chill. Send them to me. He'll know there's a prophet in Israel. So Naaman came with his horses, with his chariot, and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. Now that must be a mansion, right? It's probably a little shack. Because I think Elisha, he comes from wealthy. You remember he was a plow with all those, but he's walked away from that. It's a time of famine. He's austerity, not austere like Elijah is, but austerity like, not a vow of poverty, but guess what? We're not ostentatious because we don't have a lot because it's school of prophets, and guess what? It's not, you know, they're not all dressing in the silks of the court or anything like that. So his house, I'm guessing, is probably pretty humble. So, you know, you think of Naaman pulling up with his chariot and all his entourage and all the people with, and he comes this, like, you know, ramshackle, all just barely being held together kind of thing, and this is the guy who's going to heal me, right? Okay. And Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, now this is a slight. This is, okay, they have hospitality. You invite him in. You feed him. You take care of him. What is this all about? I'm sure it's what God told Elisha to do. And it's kind of the back of his hand, no doubt. Elisha sent a messenger. He didn't even come see him. Like, yeah, you're not even important enough for me to come down. And I'm reading the paper. I'm on the obits. Yeah, I ain't got time for you. You know, whatever. I'm doing the crossword. What is he doing that he can't? This is an important guy who God wants to put in his place and humble him a little bit, I'm guessing. That would be my guess. So he sent a messenger saying, go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. Oh, joy! So he runs to Jordan. He didn't wait for his chariot. He says, no, he doesn't do that. Naaman was raw. So we have Naaman with steam coming out of his ears. He went away and said, behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. Here's your healing. I don't want that. Ah! And he's like, dude, you came all the way down here. This is what you got. This is the message of the gospel. Makes people very upset. You have to do anything, really, not to speak of. You have to follow some instructions. You have to ask God. You have to come his way. But it's not hard or difficult. And I think that's a lot of times the problem. And you know what's funny to me? Is what does a Syrian general know about cleansing lepers. I can't tell you how many times over the years both people inside and outside the church would tell me my job and give me my job description. It works in the secular world. When I was an electrician, somebody over my shoulder trying to tell me how to do something, I'm thinking like, I'm the one with the license. Why don't you just go away? Let me tell you something to do. Then the spiritual world, people tell us how to be Christians all the time. I'm thinking, like, and they catch us sometimes, and if they do, own it. You answer somebody roughly because you're in an argument with them, a debate, and it shouldn't be a debate, it should be sharing. Oh, you don't want to receive? Okay. But your heart is in it. You desperately want that person to believe. So you would say something sarcastic or snippy or something like that. And now the fur starts to fly, and they call you on it. Own it. You did it. You're right. I shouldn't be like that. But everyone's telling us how we're supposed to live our life. I'm thinking, you know what? Why don't you get saved and demonstrate? You can be the master. I'll be the disciple, okay? I'll just follow you around. But I don't say anything real sarcastic like that, because it doesn't really. But people who've never pastored nothing will come and tell you how to, outside, well, you should do this, and you've got to be, and you should, but that's scripture. Here's this guy, well, I thought he was going to, what? Dude, what do you know? Did you stop and think about that? When we go out to battle, we'll stay in our lane. We'll do what you tell us to do, okay? But right now, you don't know anything about this, and all of a sudden you're the expert? So much so that he's all upset. Now, it was a slight, to be sure. But, wait, I got a what? And I'll be clean? Hoo-hoo! This is great! This is the best news ever! All I can do is ask Jesus into my heart and I don't go to hell? You're kidding me, right? This is serious now. Don't be pulling on my leg. Don't be telling me stuff that this is for real. Are you serious? That's all I gotta do. Right? Why is he going away upset? And he's got people around him who love him, apparently. Because it seems like he's the kind of guy you don't want to cross. The servants came in and spake to him and said, and I'm thinking they're speaking real quietly. And my father, the prophet had bid thee do some great thing. Wouldst thou not have done it? How much rather that when he said to thee, wash and be clean? That's what he said. I know, because that's what I'd say.
You're probably right. The prophet is right.
Then went he down and dipped himself seven times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. Now, one of the servants, I'm thinking, okay, he's going to do it. Uh-oh. are these men of faith? I don't know, but they're thinking probably like you or I would think, nothing ventured, nothing gained. You're not out anything. He dips once, he dips twice, and you're thinking, oh, it's better work, or my name's Mud, if you're the one who told him, right? Well, he does it seven times. And his flesh came again, like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Isn't that incredible? God cares about a Syrian general. I think that's just remarkable. Like Jesus said, lots of lepers. And he returned to the man of God. He and all his company, and came and stood before him. He said, behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth, but in Israel. Now therefore I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. He's a believer as much as he can be. Is he born again? There's no born again in the Old Testament. There are men of faith, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. We're going to see them in the kingdom, okay? They're not born again like us. They're a different class, but there's still faith. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. Is Naaman a man of faith? There's no God in all the earth, but in Israel. We got gods up there in Syria, and one of them jokers could do something. I'm going to come all the way down here. I know, and I think he knows. We see Naaman in heaven. I in my thinking, yes. And he said, as the Lord liveth, that's all caps. What if Elisha, he hears that name coming from, you know, just very short while ago, pagan lips. As the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. Oh, no, that's Elisha answered. My bad. He said, I pray thee take a blessing of thy servant. I want to pay you. I know it's not pay to play here, but I want to be a blessing to you. You want living in a mansion. I got plenty. Take some. Okay? This is absolutely reasonable. And the workman is worthy of his hire. And Elisha answers eminently reasonably. And he said, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. I think this is like Abraham and the king of Sodom. No. You ain't going to say, forget about it. You ain't going to say that I made Abraham a rich man. Forget that. I'm not taking anything with the guys of Eden. Let that go. Other than that, be on your way. You remember, King of Sodom, you take the stuff, I'll take the souls. Ooh, that sounds kind of satanic to me. But Abraham wasn't getting buying it anyway. Naaman said, shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant two mules burdened of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. Now he can't do that. He's not going down to Jerusalem. He's going up to Syria. He can't offer in the high place. What's he supposed to do? So I've been doing burnt offerings all my life, and I'm done with those gods who aren't. They never benefited me at all. I got leprosy, and none of them could do anything. So he wants to take holy earth back. You go to Jerusalem, you want to do that too. You want to grab rocks and whatever, you know what I mean? I'm not going to sacrifice to anyone but unto the Lord. In this thing, the Lord pardon thy servant, that when thy master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on his hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. Look, I got to take my masters to what we do. I got to take him to the house of Rimmon, okay? And this is how it's done. And he said unto him, Elisha said, go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. Yeah, don't worry about that. What? You know, God knows who we are. He knows our situation. He knows if we have a temple handy. He knows if there's a high priest. He knows if we're working for this guy who's going to make us do, take him to the house of Rimmon. We have freedom here in America. Naaman's not autonomous. Well, he's a general, and he might talk to his master, his king, and say, yeah, that's not a good idea. I'm done with that Rimmon guy, you know, but, and kings will say, you're going to take me anyway, and he takes him anyway. And God knows all that. Yeah, go in peace. You don't worry about that, okay? But Gehazi, now, if we like Gehazi, we don't like him anymore, okay? We officially don't like him. And I think I had a record saying that it's written somewhere, I can't remember if it's in Mishnah or that Gehazi is the boy that was raised from the dead, the widow of Zarephath's son that Elijah raised from the dead. Is that true? We don't know. But here he's the servant of Elisha. We know that. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, behold, my master hath spared Naaman the Syrian, little sneer there, this Gentile dog, in not receiving into his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. What's the thought process? What's the issue here? So Gehazi followed after Naaman. When Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from the chariot to meet him. He said, it's all well? And he said, all is well. My master has sent me, saying, behold, even now there be come to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophet. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changes of garments. The number here is 5,280 in this Bible for that's worth. So it's a little chunk of change there. Nothing to name it. All kinds of money for Gehazi. But he's dissimulating. He is not telling the truth. If you have to lie, guess what? God's not in it. Well, it's a good purpose. No, it's not. It's just greed. It's just greed. And Naaman said, be content, take two talents. He wants a talent. So you got to take two. And he urged him and bound two talents of silver and two bags with two changes of garments and laid them upon two of his servants, and they bare them before him. So he has his servants. Yeah, take this. Help him carry this. You'll catch up. And when he came to the tower, he took them from the hand, bestowed them in the house. He let the men go, and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said unto him, whence comest thou, Gehazi? And he said, thy servant went no whither. Hey, where you been, dude? Oh, nowhere in particular. This is the answer. Well, where have you been very specifically? Let me frame it that way. And he said to him, went not my heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Hey, dude, don't you remember? You're working for a prophet. Is it a time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? Is that what this ministry is all about? It's just the bottom line. At the end of the day, if we can, be in the black and we get the biggest bank account, and that's what really matters. If, God's love. Hey, there are ministries out there. God blessed me with this Learjet so I can fly around the world and build widows from their money. And it's all a fake. It's, how it is. I hate flying with those unwashed and irregular planes. Is it time to receive money and receive garments and all of the arts and vineyards and sheep and oxen? Men servants made said, by the way, why not? God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. Because we're misrepresenting God. That's the whole thing. There's nothing more complicated than that. You've watched TV in the past. Not as much. I remember in the 80s especially. There was one guy after another, if you don't send me money, God's going to take me off the air. And I said, if he answers prayers, he would. He will. Yeah, because you are just a... But me being judgmental. Because people always made it sound like, God's been really poor with his money and he's this close to bankruptcy. And if you don't give, I don't care if you have to eat dog food for the rest of the month. You better send me $20 and keep us on the air. And one guy, if you remember this, one guy... if you don't send in $8 million, God said he was going to take my life. Don't nobody send nothing. Let's see if God's for real. That's my thinking right there. Well, I know he's for real, but I'd just like to see a prophecy come to pass in my life. So, and then, of course, that money came rolling in, so he upped it to $25 million because God changed his mind and upped it. That was such a spectacle. I'm so opposed to this. These lessons will stay with me my whole life. There was a guy with a glass emporium in L.A., I think, or someplace in Southern California. I say glass emporium. I didn't want to say Crystal Cathedral. It might be a little too close to home for somebody. But what a heretic. He was just a heretic with a capital H. He wanted a call for another reformation, a reformation of self-esteem. God wants us to love ourselves. And when he said, God said, he wants you to love your neighbor as you love yourself. The reason we don't love our neighbors is we don't love ourselves enough. What a heretic. Okay, I'm gonna be ungracious in my comments here pretty quick. Is this the time for that? It's a rhetorical question. The leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee and unto thy seed forever. And he went out from his presence a leper, as white as snow. The answer is no. And by the way, here's something. I don't want to put too much of a burden, and I don't want to sound legalistic in this. Please don't misrepresent God. Who did that? Well, good guys. Moses. Right?
Must we fetch rock from this, must we water from this rock? You rebels, you're...
Moses, cool out. Why are you so upset? God's not upset. He's smacking the rock with the... And God says, okay, you're in a penalty box. You can't go into the promised land now. You remember that? Why? He misrepresented God. When he acts like that on God's behalf. Now, if I ever said anything, and it's really, really hard to thread that needle exactly all the time and say something in such a way, I want to give you this and tell you how important it is. Wow, I think it's... But I don't know. I got my own prejudices, my own upbringing, my own spin and take on things. I really tried the best I get. And you know, one of the prayers over the years, it's like, Lord, I want to say this just right. I want to say this forcefully enough. I want to say this with enough certainty, but I don't want to say it in such a way that I don't want people going away. If God, the Holy Spirit of God, if you've ever heard anything that's convicted you, no apologies. Welcome to my life. I'm hailing the word and I'm convicting with my own self. It's a two-edged sword. I don't do dainty little, surgeries with it. It's bloody. It's a mess. It cuts both ways. Of course it's going to be, but I never go out of my way to punch somebody in the nose. I know some people's situation when I say something, thinking, like, listen, this is what it is. It is what it is. I can't change it. I don't want to be an editor. But I always want, that the truth to come across in such a way that God's glorified. God's word is God's word. Don't misrepresent. Don't be legalistic, remember? What we learned Sunday morning? Don't be a mystic either, or asceticism isn't the way to God. But God is what? Faith. And that, and by grace, that not of yourself, it's a gift of God, not of works, the same as you boast. But just don't misrepresent God. Don't misrepresent your own self too. Ananias and Sapphira, anyone? Oh, look how spiritual I am. We sold the land, and here you've got it all. What a dumb thing to do. Let's say you sold for $100,000, and you say, here's $2,000. Thanks. Right? I mean, you don't owe nothing. But you're trying to appear more strict. Do we do that? I hope we don't. Because there's another thing I do, and I'm going to end here, okay? I can keep you all night. We're just going to do the one chapter tonight. I knew it was going to be up. It's going to be enough for us. Try to be as transparent as possible. I know we're private people, right? Especially in Maine. Tell me about it. I never know. By looking at your faces, I hardly ever know what's going on inside. Everyone's just like, yeah, I ain't going to tell them. No tells. It's my poker hand here. I'm going all in. He ain't going to know nothing. Because that's how we are. That's how we are. It doesn't make you a bad guy. And I don't mean to intimate that you're being a bad guy. There's just no tells. And that's fine. Because you don't have to be out applauding or nodding all the time or smiling. That's fine. That's fine. I've got used to the fact that you don't get a lot of feedback from them. That's it. But in private conversations, stuff like that, try to be open and honest. People perceive that with some spirit. No, I'm just like you. I'm just dealing with the stuff you're dealing with. I'm struggling, you're struggling. Hey, you messed up doing it? Yeah, I've done it. So, you know, it's not, and we try to, don't make yourself some ultra, because you know what people do? They think like, oh, I'll never be holy, like he's pretending to be, and they'll despair that, you know, that their faith isn't the real thing. But if you are really like you got something down, like you really have a great quiet time with God and something like that, you can share that. And even if it makes you kind of the okay person in that, that's fine. Honesty is honesty. It's okay to be okay with God. But just don't, let's not pretend. Pretend's it's just never a good thing. Don't misrepresent, don't pretend. Which is what I come away with, especially the end of that story. The beginning of it is just God being God, just showing up and being gracious and good.